to be able to provide a safe space for someone to be going through their career, and knowing that you're not judging them for having that condition, that you're not assuming they're not getting their work done. In fact, it's the opposite because I've been through it.
Welcome back to the Pajama Interviews. I'm your host, Michelle Irving, and this is our special series about career and chronic illness. Today, I'm joined by Antana Mascarenhas, and we are going to talk about what it is like to navigate your career while living with endometriosis, what it's like to actually navigate an executive career with this experience, and what that means and how that shapes how we look at other people and their experiences and all the different abilities of everybody coming to work. Antara is an executive in the energy and climate reform space. She leads with her extensive experience in building and strategically navigating teams. And she's also an ambassador for Endometriosis Australia. So stay tuned at the end for this week's exciting announcement. And now let's dive in. So welcome, Antara. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Michelle, and thanks for having me.
It's my absolute pleasure. So I wanted to ask you first, as we often start these conversations, could you share with us just a little bit about your diagnosis or your diagnosis experience and how old you were, whether you were a young person, a career, or whether you were actually further along in your career?
Okay, so my first kind of insight into the fact that I was having some issues was actually quite dramatic, and it's very much linked to my career because it was in the first week. It happened at work. It was in my first week at work. So on day five, so I'd gone up to Canberra as a policy graduate. For those not in Australia, the civil service here has an intake, like in many other countries, where a number of graduates will start in each department at the start of the year. So I was on day five of that intake, and I just suddenly presented with really bad period pain. Took a couple of tablets, you know, I took up a couple of just paracetamols, went for a walk to do a task that my supervisor had asked me to do. And I think that aggravated. By the time I got back to my desk, I felt faint immediately. And I said to my friend, who's now one of my, you know, oldest and dearest friends, I think I'm going to faint. Next thing I knew, I had passed out in pain. And they'd called an ambulance. I was being wheeled out into the elevator. And I remember really distinctly in that moment thinking, I've just screwed up my career. I was 25. So that was a really scary moment. As you know, endometriosis is a very nuanced, complex condition that is difficult to actually conclusively diagnose. So it wasn't diagnosed immediately. Was diagnosed many years later. Diagnosis takes place through a really invasive laparoscopy, where a telescopic instrument goes through your belly button to see visually if you do have any issues with your tissue, and then it's removed, surgery under general anaesthetic. So it's really invasive, and it's not an easy diagnosis. That's something that's really hard for women to go through, and it's expensive. So my diagnosis, by choice, it took me a while to actually go and have the laparoscopy. So it wasn't till 9 years later for me when I had the official diagnosis.
That's a really huge arc of time, and I want to just really acknowledge for you, for any of us, but I can only imagine, you know, going to Canberra, this is a big day, this is the big job, and now something extremely unexpected has happened. In those 9 years towards going and getting diagnosis, obviously the endo is still present. How are you managing and coping over this time?
Yeah, so I chose to try and manage it naturally. It turned out in hindsight that that wasn't the best way for me to manage it because my pain was extreme. I, as I've just said, in terms of that previous example, I was passing out in pain. So I would need to take some really strong medication, but I wasn't wanting to go down the track of having, you know, taking the pill, having an IUD put in, because I just didn't want to, I just wanted to try and manage it through natural medicine as much as possible. But it didn't work for me. So there was a lot of trial and error.
So in this process where you were making decisions about what was best for you at the time with what you felt was important for you, you're still working and you're still in quite an intensive job, I'm imagining, at this point in time. And while you're managing all the physical experience, how are you going emotionally in this experience as well?
Yeah, look, it was a confusing time. I think, you know, my first year in my first real job where I'm learning, I'm experiencing a new city, making new friends, sort of finding my feet in the work, in the workplace, away from my family. It's a difficult time in one's on when you're either a teenager or you're in your 20s generally, which is that stage of life when you're finding what you want to do with yourself and, you know, finding out who you are.
Yeah. Yeah. And then by the time you come into diagnosis, what was that change for you? Like, what difference did that make between that and the surgery? And what, if any, difference to managing your career after that?
Yeah, I think so I ended up deciding to have the laparoscopy because it was getting to the point where I just couldn't manage anymore without going through that. So I guess I kind of gave in to the strongest form of intervention. And then I wished I'd done it many years before because it really did ease the pain. Also, knowing what you're dealing with, I think, helps in terms of that management. So in terms of, I guess, the emotional side of it, it's confusing if you don't know anyone else who's been through it, and I didn't. I was the first in my family. My elder sister didn't have any similar issues. And I don't recall any friends in my circle having endo either. So I hadn't really known a lot about it.
And then now endometriosis has a much higher profile. There's still a lot of work to be done. But now you, in your career at this point in time, you know, you're at the C-suite experience of navigating your career. I'm wondering if you can tell us what that looks like for you now, managing endometriosis, because you're still managing a condition while navigating a career.
Yeah, so fortunately, through trial and error, I have found the way that I manage it. And I think it's a very individual path because it is so nuanced and complex. Everyone goes through their own journey to find out what medical intervention works for them. So I have now found the right one for me. So I actually, fortunately, don't present with many symptoms anymore. They're very mild symptoms. So fortunately, it doesn't have a strong impact on my day-to-day or my month. So that's quite smooth. But I think what it has done for me is, I guess, I have an awareness of what it is to go through it. So when I now in the workplace encounter someone else who is dealing with it, I have that awareness of what they might be going through.
Because you're an ambassador in this process as well, that's a pretty big public position to take. What made you decide to take up being an ambassador for an organization around a condition that, yes, it's super important that it becomes more public, but it's no small thing to stand in the world and say, I'm going to stand for this condition?
I think because over the years, I have had so many conversations with women and men who have never heard of it. So many. And I'm talking about informed people who are informed about so many other parts of the world have not heard of endometriosis. And yet it is such a common condition. The current statistics are 1 in 9 women, female at birth, have endo, yet awareness is low. And people might have heard of it, but they don't really know what it means. So that's why I agreed to be an ambassador, to talk about it more, to raise awareness of what it is, what it means, and how people can support others who are going through it, particularly in the workplace, whether you're a colleague, a manager, a leader, whether you're in HR, what you can do as an individual to make someone feel a bit more included by understanding and supporting what they're going through.
And it's a very interesting point that you raise about this, because the lack of awareness is just where we all are in society. It's like we're all just getting a bit of awareness about how much certain conditions, how much disability, how much chronic illness is in the workforce. And in fact, how many people are actually working. So statistically, one of the things that we know now is that 38% of people working identify as having a long-term health condition. And we also know that 38% of people living with a long-term health condition are in professional and leadership roles. This is new information and surveys out from the University of Melbourne. That starts to make this a lot more visible and a lot more awareness about actually people working and everybody's quiet about managing a condition that they're working with. Most people feel alone, but actually if we, everybody just put up their hand, not that we would ask them to, but if everybody put up their hand authentically and said, yeah, look, I'm managing something, we would suddenly find that we're a lot less alone than we think. And including like the statistic for endo, it's huge. Like that is a huge number of women, let alone any other condition that people are managing. And so I'm curious for you, how has it shaped the way that you might think about people living with long-term health conditions or flexible and remote working or leading a team and inclusivity? I'm just wondering if there's any real examples or thoughts you can share with us about how your experience has really genuinely influenced the way you lead.
Certainly, I have empathy for others who might be dealing with a health condition. And I think it gives me the awareness, but also drive to really build a culture in my teams where people feel comfortable to share. If they are going through something, they don't have to, but I try and create a culture where they feel comfortable to share something where I can support them. And I haven't had any members of my team who've had endometriosis. I actually did have a member of my team. I did a few years ago who had endometriosis. And it is actually, it's kind of a special thing to be able to provide a safe space for someone to be going through their career and knowing that you're not judging them for having that condition, that you're not assuming they're not getting their work done. In fact, it's the opposite because I've been through it. I think working from home really does enable people to manage their work and their lives, whether it's, you know, a health condition or caring.
Definitely caring responsibilities, yeah. Family matters, relationship matters, childcare. I mean, we're all whole humans and we don't cut that off as soon as we walk in the office door, but we've sort of become hyper-capitalism has treated us and we've all sort of fallen into the trap in one level of assuming, well, if it's not about producing widgets, then somehow we're not being the perfect human, which is the antithesis of what being a human is.
That's right. So I think one of the positives coming out of COVID is that working from home is now very much acceptable. I mean, there are still tensions around it. As you know, there are a lot of discussions about in individual companies about what the right balance is, but it's certainly shifted the dial way ahead from where it was three and a half years ago. I have been fortunate. I haven't felt that I needed to share it with many of my bosses. I've shared it where I needed support, the moments where I needed support in terms of managing it, and it will be specific things like I need to come in late probably once a month because I get a lot of pain on that day. No, you know, really supportive. And I actually had a manager, this is pre-COVID days, who would say, he proactively said to me, firstly, he understood it. He knew what it was. He understood it. He understood the impacts, which I actually find quite rare. And he said, on the days when you're having a bad experience with it, work from home for 2 or 3 days. Because if you don't, you're just going to get unwell the following week. You're just going to run yourself down if you push yourself to come into the office. So that's really good leadership, really good team management. And I have no doubt that he was having those conversations with other team members about various things going on in their lives.
I think you raise a really good point, because one of the things we know is that often the profile of somebody living with a long-term health condition, if we sort of think about that, particularly if we talk about chronic illness, it's like, well, they're unwell. And first of all, 75% of it's going to be invisible. So we're going to pretend like we're well, and we're going to usually push through. And we're going to do what we now call performing wellness. And that pushing through adds tremendous emotional and mental stress on top of the physical experience that we're having. We know that the biggest indicator that somebody is usually going to head into a flare is that they're pushing through. And this can be completely invisible to everybody else in the team, because if you're living with a chronic condition, you are usually trying to work it out. You're going home to bed usually, and then you might be getting up and then pulling everything together and pushing through to get to the office. If you're working part-time, or even if you're working full-time, you're usually going to be trying to make up those hours or make up capacity in your mind about what is being delivered in your performance on the time when you're not being paid to work. And one of the things that we found in the research that we do is that women in particular, but most people push through, and then they get to a point where it's not possible and they'll resign, because we haven't had the appropriate support and conversations in place while they move and go through those experiences. So the first thing the manager knows, or HR knows, is that the person's resigned. And in fact, if you've got somebody living with a chronic condition and you have some idea that that's happening and you're watching them overperform, that's not a sign that they're getting better. That's actually a sign, usually, that things are getting worse for them and that they're going to run their energy into the ground. And that's just because we normalize pushing through. And so what you're talking about is having somebody who, you know, before even work from home was seen as a process, identified this as, well, just don't add that pressure into your day on the days where you've already got pressure. It must have been an emotional and a mental relief just from the stress of having to go to the office, Antara.
Oh, absolutely, because I think when you're quite a conscientious worker, you would not want to, you know, to ask for that. So I think the fact that he just enabled me by really proactively suggesting it, and he didn't just say it once, you know, he said it a number of times, it did. It provided relief that AI was trusted to do my work working from home, but I was supported and someone who really, really understood this very nuanced condition. And I might add as well that I work in a male-dominated industry. So it does make those conversations even more powerful when it's coming from a male boss in a male-dominated industry.
And what have you noticed then, if anything, and it's a curiosity on my part, organisations have then had people who, you know, on one level they assume are perfectly well. COVID comes along, companies have had to adjust to something that affects everybody in different ways. I'm curious, have you noticed anything around leadership in that, or has it changed or informed your leadership even more watching everybody, including yourself, go through the COVID pandemic?
I think what COVID has probably brought to light for people quite broadly, at least in my workplace, is that anyone can be affected all of a sudden out of the blue, could be perfectly healthy one day, get COVID, and that could really affect them long term. So, you know, I think it brings people, it makes them a bit more understanding of other people who are going through or have for many years had a health long term condition. And I think it probably also highlights to them that it is not that person's fault. Sometimes there's a perception that people who've had a long term condition did something to get it, or they might be perceived as, you know, not that hardworking, not that, which when COVID came along, I think anyone could have been affected. And I saw some, you know, people that I knew who got long COVID really early on in the pandemic
Well, they had a new experience of bodies and health and what they were going to be in their identity and how to navigate it. And I think for me, I worked from home remotely for a decade in a government role while living with a chronic condition. And I negotiated that and I navigated the system to do that. And I didn't re-prosecute the case every time there was a new manager. It was known that this was the process. And it was very supportive because it enabled me to be able to productively, creatively, intellectually, and strategically contribute and do what I'm 100% capable of doing. And I would go to work for the stakeholder meeting, but we really refined what was and actually required my physical presence when my creative, intellectual, and mental presence could really be boosted by a working from home arrangement around that. What I noticed through the process is all of the ways in which I had learned to work when COVID arrived, I actually had extensive expertise in how to do this. In fact, I had expertise in how to work from home while the partner was working from home or while everything else in your day was going around. And that creativity, emotionally and mentally, I had the stamina to do it. And I think that's one of the things we don't think about when we're thinking about people working from home or remotely, that it does take emotional, mental, and creative stamina in order to hold that and work and be incredibly self-initiative in doing the work that is before you. And that's something that I feel like that's the other side that happened, is that I watched the rest of the world get on the page. Oh, hang on a sec, this isn't as easy as everybody else thought. And now we've got this balance, we've got this conversation, and I absolutely 100% want to acknowledge that many, many companies and organizations are requiring people, including people with long-term health conditions, to go back to work and be at the office and seen at the office. And so that is the next part of the conversation. And there are tools and resources and processes for which you can negotiate, not least of which are the legal protections that we all have around that. And at least at this point in time, we have some feel for how the rest of the world got on the page about, oh, hang on a sec, the world is not the way I thought when it comes to having a health condition. So it's really powerful what you're saying in that process as well. I wonder if there's anything else that you wanted to share, if your tips or your tricks, things that you've learned that you would say, hey, this is what worked for me in managing endo and managing my career, and this is the way I started to think about it, and this is how I started to really step into my power and manage my experience. I'm wondering if there were anything in that way that you wanted to share.
Yeah, so I think firstly, in terms of the management, I personally would have just listened to my specialist's advice right from the start and had the proper diagnosis and had the recommended medical intervention from the beginning. That would have saved me a lot of pain, and it would have saved me the build-up of further endo, because the more you kind of try and sort of manage it, the more it builds up. That's not to say that the intervention I ended up settling with is going to be right for anyone, which is why I don't mention what it is, because, like I said, it's very, very individual, and I know others who have had the same and it hasn't worked for them. So it is trial and error for the individual person. But I think getting in with the right specialists, support team around you, and also joining various support groups. So there are support groups on social media, there are support groups at hospitals. Endometriosis Australia has a lot of resources. So in terms of that management, I would recommend a couple of those things. In terms of the career side of things, I think it's now easier to have that conversation with your boss, but it is cultural. So I think it's important to be working in a culture where you can be open and just discreetly about it with the right people. If you don't feel like you have that culture, then I think it's worthwhile looking at whether that's the right organization or industry for you. And if you are yet, if you've already been diagnosed with endo and you've got the signs and you are yet to actually choose your career, depending on how old you are, what stage it's sort of presented for you, I think there's a lot of sense in looking at careers where you can have that flexibility to work from home. You can have the flexibility to sit down while you work, that you're not working on your feet all day. And I think the final thing I'd say would be for managers and leaders is to learn a bit more about it, because it is so prevalent. You could just make a difference to one person at the very least by reading a few fact sheets. And yeah. Endometriosis Australia is a very, very easy place to get those. But, you know, the World Wide Web has plenty of information as well to educate yourself on it.
100%. And accommodations, I think this is really important to talk about as well, is that most accommodations that people ask for, particularly whether it's a long-term health condition or a disability or and a disability, most of them don't cost organizations. That's actually the data is in. And what you are potentially losing is the incredibly talented, creative, bright, strategic, beautiful, harmonious, gorgeous talent of women and men who just happen to be living with a health condition. That's all it is.
Yeah, and I would say they're generally pretty resilient as well.
Absolutely. And tenacious. And, yes, very tenacious.
Because you have to be, you've got no choice.
Yeah, 100%.
So I think that, yeah, you're spot on. I think that there's a place for everyone, and organisations are increasingly seeing that. And my organisation is certainly young.
Thank you so much for joining us and for sharing your wisdom with us. I really appreciate it. And I want to wish you much gentleness and much joy in the career that you are moving forward with and that you're clearly flourishing in. Thank you so very much for joining me for this very special season around career and chronic illness. If you are trying to navigate your career while managing chronic conditions, we have some very exciting news for you. We have a whole new website, careerandchronicillness.com, which has lots of free resources where you can access some of our career and chronic roadmap, as well as details of our group programs, our specialized training, including how to have this funded through your organization as professional development. And you can also work with me privately. So pop over careerandchronicillness.com, and I look forward to sharing with you next week in this very special season.